I'm calling home this morning a Kiwi living in the land of Arabica coffee, the Blue Nile and the Rift Valley, but he hasn't got to them with his family yet. There's war on the border and a lot of poverty. And Stephen Court has gone to Ethiopia to make a difference there. So there'll be less geography and more society, I think, in our chat this morning. Stephen's in the capital, Addis Ababa, with his wife, Karen, a doctor, and their children, Angelina, Nathaniel, and Jonathan, all under 10. And he works for World Vision. Stephen's got a degree in forestry. He's been away from New Zealand for 9 years in a number of countries, but the family did manage to come back home recently on a visit. Stephen Court, salam.
Salam. I'm Siganali.
Is Amharic a difficult language to learn?
Yeah, look, Jim, it's an incredible difficult language. My wife and I, we thought, look, we can learn this language, we can become proficient and work it. And so we started having language lessons. So everything you say has to be in the right gender, which it just makes it very complex. So I lasted about 3 months, I think, just because of the pressure I had to pull out. But my wife has done it for 6 months and still getting there, but can honestly say it's a very challenging language.
And greetings are important, I'm told, in Ethiopia, aren't they? Not just maybe rote like they are for us.
Absolutely. Look, it's not just a sort of a hi and bye when you meet people. It's very much part of the culture of when you see somebody, you introduce and say hello in a very proper way, in a sense. And if you don't, it can actually be taken as an insult. So the whole kind of hi and bye that we can do in New Zealand, off the back of the hand is not really welcomed here. You've got to really get involved and really greet people, and people then feel very welcome and part of your day.
Stephen, I found a good one that I thought would be all-purpose. Konjo, which I think means beautiful.
Konjo? Look, you're telling me. I have heard the word, but I actually don't know what that means. So, look, we'll run with that and we'll say beautiful for Konjo.
Thank you. Your entire tenure in Ethiopia has been during the pandemic, really. So how's it been so far generally for you?
Look, it's a very interesting start. There was a mass exodus of expats in Ethiopia as everybody was rushing to get out in case COVID went wild here. And then from a health perspective, very hard to get medical care, hard to get out. So everybody sort of evacuated just as we were getting in.
It's a big town where you are. They call it mostly Addis for short, don't they?
Correct, yes. No, Addis. You don't hear Addis Ababa too much.
And it's a striking town and architecturally, and they call it the political capital of Africa. I know a lot of the country is very poor, but it must also be a very stimulating place to be for you.
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting place. I mean, the history is incredible. In fact, the only African country that hasn't been colonized, and Ethiopians are incredibly proud of that. So there was a brief period of about 5 years between, what was that, 1936 to 1941, when the Italians occupied Ethiopia, but they were moved on. And I think in the 1950s, there was only about 400,000 people here, to now over 5 million. You have, in a sense, the slums that are right next to the, you know, the expensive homes or the areas or the buildings, or it's kind of all integrated. So it makes it very, very interesting, but also has its challenges as well.
Yeah. Well, you're in the cradle of civilization too, aren't you? Doesn't DNA suggest that humans spread out from somewhere not too far from Addis Ababa about 100,000 years or so ago?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a place up in the north called Dankel Depression, which is actually the hottest and lowest place on Earth. It's 125 metres below sea level, and that is where they found the skeleton remains of what's known as Lucy, and that is where they think the earliest and the sort of the birth of humans was back in that time. So it's pretty inhospitable place, but the cradle of humanity, it's right there in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Temperatures up into the 50s, very hot.
Very hot. I'll ask you more about your job and also Karen's skills as well a bit later on, but what drew you to Ethiopia in the first place?
I love the experience of going into new cultures, into new places that in a sense, really kind of blow the worldview that you have in World Vision of what life is like, normal, what normal life is like. I guess to experience a different culture, but also to really do what we can to support the communities as well. Been fortunate to have good educations, good experiences, and we really wanted to give that back as much as we could. So an opportunity came up into Ethiopia, which is our largest office in the partnership, global partnership, with a staff of 1,600. So we took up the opportunity, and then here we are.
Here you are, and we can imagine you've been restricted in your movements and activities. You've got three young children with you, so what can you do as a family?
Yeah, look, that's a good question, Jim. There's a lot of instability in the country as well, and conflict, which has created an environment where areas that you would normally be able to travel to quite freely have been quite inaccessible and quite dangerous to get to. So as a family, we haven't been able to get out a lot into the environment. In fact, the very first time we tried to get out of Addis and up into the mountains for a walk, actually it was only about 5 weeks into our trip here, we went with a family who had been doing this walk with their dogs for the last 6 years and up into the hills. You know, incredibly beautiful walking around, and out of nowhere we got attacked as a group. We had two families there, another guy, we had about six children, and we got attacked by a couple of guys with sticks, and one of the guys that was with us, a surgeon, he got his wrist broken, he got cuts, another guy got knocked out from his head, and they stole stuff, and that was kind of introduction to, I guess, the realities of COVID. You know, COVID put a lot of pressure on humanity here and the society. A lot of people, in fact, a huge proportion of the society, live day by day by what they earn. And COVID shut down so many of the factories and processing parts that people relied on in order to live. Good people have to resort to whatever means they can in order to survive. And you know, it's really hard to watch, but that was the reality. And so that's what we jumped into straight away. And so that kind of put a bit of a dampener on us wanting to explore a bit further under the current situation.
Yeah, that's very nicely forgiving of you and nicely explained. Yeah, that would have been very unnerving. So you've stayed closer to home. Are there malls? Are there playgrounds? Are there swimming pools?
It's quite a different city in that respect. So there are some parks, very few parks in the city, but really there is nothing. There is very few kind of places to go. Shopping malls don't really exist. We don't kind of have the same shopping kind of environment that you would expect in the West. And so, you know, as a family, you don't just kind of head down to Westfields and, you know, and have a bit of a roam around and get some lunch. So friends are incredibly important in this environment. Some of the things that we do quite regularly is a couple of the big international hotels have swimming pools, which they open up to the public. And so we spend quite a bit of time there. It's a sort of a safe environment. It's nice. It's green. It's good and fun. So that's some of the things that we do. But certainly friends, spending time with friends is one of the things we do a lot of.
Okay, but the children are coping all right with that?
You know, they love it. For them, you know, as long as they've got some good friends and they go to a really good school, although actually it was closed for a lot of the last year because of COVID. But, you know, with their friends, with their school, with their routine, they really enjoy it. And they don't even blink. They don't even, you know, or cars coming on the wrong side of the road or onto the footpath. It doesn't faze them. They just continue to operate as kids, have fun and enjoy their time here. But, you know, some of the insecurity has certainly impacted them, as I talked about, like the attack we had. Our house has been attempted break-in three times since we've been here. Yet, you know, we've got 12-foot fences, we've got barbed wire, we've got full-time guards, but yet we still had attempted break-in. So things like that are unnerving for the kids. And, you know, we have noticed things like at nighttime we lose power quite frequently. And, you know, they are scared. You know, it does impact them. But generally day-to-day, they get on, they love it, and they enjoy doing what kids just do and having fun.
Yeah, it's going to teach them how to, the positive side, I suppose, is it'll teach them how to be fluid in the face of life's challenges. It can't help but do that, can it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a never-ending changing environment here, and you have to adapt.
So one of the world's fastest growing economies, an exciting, vibrant place to be, which we'll get to. But I was reading about the big mountain, Stephen, that looks over the city and how women go up it each day to bring down eucalyptus wood for 50 cents a day. There is such a contrast in Addis, isn't there, as you've described, but it must be evident all the time.
You know, people are trying to adapt to the normal, to the new, whatever the new is. And so you see the impacts of that changing through. And look, the Ntoto Mountain up on the edge of Addis is an incredible place. Back in the 1900s, Addis as a city almost had to close because of the lack of resources for people who were living here after many, many years. And they had a major project in which they imported a huge amount of eucalyptus from Australia and planted up all around Addis, so all around the mountains and everywhere. They did a huge drive to plant eucalyptus so they had the wood and the fodder and the things to survive. And to this day, you know, it's like a green belt right around Addis and up into the mountains of this eucalyptus. So for us, having spent the last 8 years in Australia, you know, coming here and, you know, around it, it feels quite homely to smell the eucalyptus.
You're high enough yourself, the world's third highest capital city at 2,400 metres. Now, the coffee, Stephen, is famous.
Absolutely. Look, and having what they call a coffee ceremony, Buna Tetu, which is essentially says, come drink coffee. I mean, how good is that? And so this is a big coffee ceremony that's performed actually in the houses probably on a daily basis. So the ceremony itself can take, you know, an hour and a half, and you've got to have the right dress for the ladies who's doing it. Taking the coffee, the raw coffee beans, and the whole process you watch and you sit there as they prepare the coffee right from, as I say, from raw coffee. They roast them. They then do all the process right through till they then serve you this fresh coffee, which is certainly very strong. As a guest, you've got to have 3 cups of coffee to show your respect, so to speak.
Gee.
And so you have three sort of small cups of coffee, and if you kind of leave before that, you know, you haven't done the right thing. But it's wonderful, you know, the smoke, there's frankincense. Love it.
Gee, you'd have a high octane rest of the day after that. don't women walk the streets with thermos flasks of coffee? Isn't that Addis's version of coffee carts?
Yes, you do. There's many little coffee stores all over the streets.
Stephen Court calling home from Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. There's a spriss, just before we leave coffee, there's a spriss I was reading, which is half coffee and half tea, which sounded pretty weird, but I don't know if you've come across that.
Absolutely, yes. No, that is indeed here. It sounds very weird. It's very good.
Half the population's under the age of 18 in Ethiopia, which is a recipe for dynamism, isn't it? But also problems if, as you said, there aren't enough jobs, and I suppose there aren't. But I don't want to paint the wrong picture of where you are, because you've got amazing things. You've got the biggest market in Africa, but tourists often miss it. Have you managed to get down to the Makato market?
Yes, look, I've been into the Makato market a couple of times. Again, unfortunately, the kind of the time and the place at the moment with the insecurity and COVID, it's a bit insecure. Mm. And so it's a challenging place to go at the moment. So often, if you want anything, because you can get anything there at the markets, if you want something, you often send in your home help or your support that or local who can and go and get there. But look, I'm really hoping in time that they will sort of open up and become a bit more free.
Gee, what an interesting life you're leading there. Do you wear any of the local white cotton with the strips of colour in it, or are you dazzling the locals with our Kiwi cotton shirts and shorts?
Yeah, look, no, the white is for the opposite gender, so that's mainly for the females.
Oh, okay.
Right. In fact, entirely for the females. So they wear that dress, and so no, I haven't got one of those in my wardrobe. I have been known to wear the shorts quite frequently. It's not a common practice. Often boys wear shorts, men wear trousers. Very typical African.
Yeah.
But look, I've been in New Zealand too long. I've grown up with bare feet, shorts, and t-shirt, and I must admit, when it's a nice day, the old shorts come out. So, yes.
Ethiopians are legendary dancers, aren't they?
They are, yes.
And they like visitors to join in.
Yes, they do. Yes, no. It's if you go to the shows, any of the local shows, you will be, if you have eye contact, you will be brought up to the front and made to try out the dancing.
Okay, one of the oldest Christian traditions there in the world.
About 82% of the population is Orthodox. It's huge. You know, everywhere you go, there's the Orthodox churches everywhere, and certainly, you know, at night time, during the day, I'm hearing a number of the different churches all through the night do their calls to prayer and their preaching and their singing, and the different churches each month celebrate different things, and so you'll be driving to work one day and suddenly, oh, I'm not going to be able to get through here because the traffic is ground to a halt because another Orthodox church is celebrating and all the people are out enjoying that experience. So they have an incredible power within the communities, whether they're Orthodox, whether they're Muslim, Protestant, Catholics. They have an incredible sense of authority around what takes place within the community. So I guess for myself, being in a development organization, we work very, very closely with the religious leaders.
World Vision Ethiopia is the largest NGO in Ethiopia, as you said, 1,600 staff. But any other Kiwis apart from you?
No, in fact, Kiwis in the country, we have only heard of one other Kiwi family in the country. They are doctors. The cost of living here is really quite startling. Again, if you read, you know, you do your reviews online and look at cost of living and things, and you know, they say, well, Ethiopia is cheap and, you know, cheap compared to New Zealand, but living here is incredibly expensive. Cost of food, incredibly expensive. Cars are incredibly expensive. Let's say, for example, we take a Toyota Corolla, a 2005 Toyota Corolla, sort of three-door hatch, which is a small car. You know, in New Zealand, you may pay, let's say, $5,000 or $6,000. In Ethiopia here, you could pay up to $40,000 for one of those vehicles. And that's all because of the tax, the importation. So essentially they say with cars, it's the three times the value was put on because of tax.
Wow.
The only good thing is we don't have the shopping malls and everything else, so you're not constantly out spending the money. So,
no.
Which is a good thing.
It's reported by Habitat for Humanity that only 7% of houses in Addis are connected to any kind of sewer system. Per capita annual income, $850. So your work's cut out for you there. You oversee a number of different departments that are responsible for World Vision Ethiopia's donor relations from end to end, don't you? That's your job?
We're really fortunate. We have a good budget of around $160 million US a year. We have to apply for, you know, a lot of applications for grants, and US is a huge funder into Ethiopia. So we have the teams that are getting that funding and designing the projects as they apply for those funds. Another teams that then look at the sort of the program quality of it. So ensuring that what we promise the donors is what we're able to deliver. We're setting up our own, in a sense, organization here to bring in local income as well. So that we can bring local income in to then go back out into the community.
Speaking of local income, I see the city government has announced this big $4 billion plus deal with a South African developer to build 500,000 affordable homes. Now, that's major. Where will the money come from, do you know?
Yeah, good question. Investors and often diaspora, people who moved out of Ethiopia when things got tough a number of years ago, spread around the world, the diaspora there, they're sending funds back, they're investing back into Ethiopia, into huge amounts of building. So you have literally hundreds and hundreds of high-rise buildings that are being put up and kind of in the process of construction and most of those are accommodation. So a lot of that has slowed down. So again, COVID really had a big impact on that because, again, workers weren't able to work. Where the money's coming from and what will happen with that, I don't know. I'll have to wait and see for that.
I'm conscious of the time, but I've still got just a few things left to ask you if I can. months of sunshine and then months of cool days and rain.
By mid-September, the rains have finished, and then you essentially get right through to June, you get uninterrupted sunshine every day. Wonderful. We have mid-20s during the day and then down to sort of mid to low teens during the night. So incredible weather, wonderful weather.
Yeah. Wonderful weather.
Yes.
Is Karen using her medical skills?
Yes. So my wife, Karen, is a obstetrician gynecologist. Actually starts next week with a hospital here, private hospital. But she has been working on a volunteer basis here as well. And so some of the skills that she have are actually unique to this country. So she's going to be bringing some new areas of training into the country, which is wonderful. We have the equipment at the hospital, but nobody can use it because nobody's trained in it. So she's really looking forward to it, really looking forward to investing into the people here. But not only that, I guess it's training and building them up so that can continue long into the future.
Yeah, oh, that's great. When you come back to New Zealand like last time, do you stock up on anything here to take back to a place like Addis?
Oh, yes, I laugh because I almost cried coming back because it was such a painful experience. But yes, indeed. So we came back last Tuesday with 265 kgs worth of stuff.
Gee.
We brought back, I think, about 9.5 to 10 kgs of butter.
Wow.
We certainly maximized what we could bring back from New Zealand to kind of last us through as well.
You wouldn't need to take pancake mix. I understand Ethiopia has plenty of pancakes.
Absolutely, yes. Look, they make a what's called injera, which is essentially a pancake. It's a sour. It's what's called a sourdough flatbread, and this is the staple. So Ethiopians eat it, you know, all day, and then they put their toppings kind of on top, and then no utensils. It's all about experiences. Everything's about the hands. It has quite a fermented taste to it, and not my favourite. So I avoid, if I can, the traditional injera, which is the big pancake.
Okay, so there were loaves of bread in that luggage. Hey, has the family been vaccinated? I understand this vaccine denial fairly prevalent in Ethiopia.
Getting vaccinations through into the country has been incredibly slow. We're a huge population here. We are about 118 million. Yet the stats, I was actually just looking at them today, yesterday's stats, we were up to about 2.3 million people have been vaccinated. We were very fortunate when we went back to New Zealand, we were able to take advantage of the vaccinations there. And so both Karen were fully vaccinated, which is great because we don't want to be stuck here if travel becomes, you know, impeded by not having the vaccination certificate. So it was great to get that.
Last question, Stephen. Your contract's for 3 years. I think it's your expectation you'll complete another couple of international placements before you return home. Is that for the sake of the children? I mean, you're giving them a heck of an education in one way, but what is your long-term future?
You know, we want to take the opportunity while we're out. It's certainly a lot easier once you're out to continue to be out. So for us, we will probably look to do another couple of placements, Africa or Asia or somewhere else through that. Before we go back, look, I love living in these kind of countries. I think it's, while I love New Zealand dearly and it's an incredible place to live in, I think it's a wonderful experience to be in a country that's not your own and to really get to know it, to you know, to work through the challenges, to work through the difficulties. And I love it. I love that experience. And from a kid's perspective, you know, building their worldview, I think, is really important. You know, they've actually never lived in New Zealand. And for us, I think it's important that we take them back to New Zealand at some point so that they can have somewhere to call home. So they're not becoming these kids that are transient because they don't know where their roots are. So for us, we can probably get another couple of international placements before it's kind of important to get back towards the end of high school into university so the kids can establish New Zealand as a place that they call home. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with COVID and the world changing. But we certainly are up for a bit more adventure.
It sounds like you are. Great to talk to you. An intrepid life and also in a great cause. Well done on what you do, and thanks so much for giving us your time.
Thank you, Jim. It's been great to talk with you.
Stephen Court in Ethiopia.